Hi, I'm Rose Aguilar, host of Your Call, a show created at KALW with the support of listeners like you. As you listen to the programming you value, give your support to KALW's September campaign. Join us for the first time or renew your membership at KALW.org. Thank you. Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The increasing number of deadly shootings in the United States has intensified the debate about gun violence, the widespread availability of guns, and lax gun laws. According to a new survey by Harvard and Northeastern, 22% of American adults own 265 million guns. That is more than one gun for every American adult. A group of what the survey is calling super owners have amassed an average of 17 guns apiece. The survey estimates that America's gun stock has increased by 70 million since 1994. The new documentary, Making a Killing, Guns, Greed, and the NRA, tells the stories of how guns and the billions made by gun companies affect the lives of everyday Americans. It features personal stories from people across the country who've been affected by gun violence, including survivors and victims' families. The film also exposes how the powerful gun companies and the NRA are resisting legislation while making hundreds of millions of dollars in profits. So what will it take to reduce gun violence? Here in California, we will be voting on gun control proposition in November. Proposition 63 would prohibit the possession of large capacity ammo magazines, require background checks for those who buy ammunition, and establish procedures for taking guns from felons. Recent studies show that background checks significantly reduce gun violence. So why is it so difficult to pass common sense gun legislation? Today we are joined by Robert Greenwald, an award-winning feature film and documentary filmmaker and founder and president of Brave New Films. Robert has produced and directed 8 full-length documentaries, including Outfoxed, Rupert Murdoch's War on Journalism, and his most recent, Making a Killing, Guns, Greed, and the NRA. And Robert joins us from Los Angeles. Hi, Robert. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
Great to have you. We are also joined by Lori Jones, Brave New Films Program Director, and she's also joining us from Los Angeles. Hi, Lori. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Robert, I want to start off with you. Thank you so much for making this film. It is so powerful. You have taken on so many important issues over the years. Why did you decide to make a film about guns? Robert?
I think it was several things that happened at the same, more or less the same time that convinced me and my colleagues at Brave New Films that it was time to do the film. Number one, in our research, and every time we decide to do one documentary, it literally means we can't do 10, 15, or 20 others. So the decision is a very important one. We're a very small nonprofit. We rely on, you know, small donations and foundations. And so we're careful about what we decide to do. And what was clear is that no one had directly taken on the NRA and the gun companies and connected their greed and profiteering with the increasing number of deaths. There are many other good and important films and documentaries and study groups, but that connection really helps explain your question in the beginning. Why so many deaths, and why don't we have common sense legislation? Well, it's not an accident. There's a strong profit incentive for the NRA and the gun companies, and that is driving this.
I appreciate how, in addition to telling personal stories along with sobering statistics, you include profits. The guns and ammunition industry generates about $11.7 billion a year. You also look at specific companies. Beretta brought in $638 million in 2012. They gave $2.2 million to the NRA. Strum, Ruger and Company, $518 million. Smith & Wesson, $626 million. So you do a great job of really connecting the dots. That's often missing from some of the stories that we hear about this issue. When you did all this research, what would you say really struck you the most?
Well, I think it was two things that stand out. One was I went around the country filming and interviewing people, all kinds of different states over 2 years. And look, I've been to Afghanistan where I filmed and interviewed people. I've been to Pakistan where I filmed and interviewed drone survivors. But the scope of this destruction, the way it was across all socioeconomic backgrounds, all racial backgrounds, in so many different states, really had a devastating impact on me, much more than I had anticipated, looking at death every day and knowing it is completely unnecessary. Mm-hmm. Families and lives that are torn apart and will never, ever be the same. And this can be prevented. This can be stopped. So that was one part of it. And then the other part was what you were saying so well in citing the numbers before. The amount of money that's being made. This is not, for a lot of people, about the Second Amendment. This is not about safety. This is about corporations, large corporations, gun companies, using their lobbying arm, the NRA, to scare people so they will buy more and more and more guns. Mm.
You also include video of members, top-level members, I should say, of the NRA, who oppose this common sense legislation, along with mostly Republican politicians. And Lori Jones, you also worked on this film. What really struck you? I mean, there's so much. A couple other statistics. We have 100 gun shows every single week in the United States. Every 16 hours, a woman is shot and killed by a husband or a boyfriend. And then you look at children. 7 children are killed by guns every day. Since the Sandy Hook tragedy in 2012, a child has been shot and killed every other day. I mean, this is just hard to wrap your head around, but you were involved in this film. What really struck you the most?
Oh, goodness. I mean, just like you mentioned, there were so many statistics that were actually surprising, even though you know this issue, you know how it's being presented in the news. I think at first it was Sandy Hook trying to pass universal background checks after Sandy Hook. 92% of Americans agreed with universal background checks. And then Congress failed to pass any common sense legislation at all. And I think that's, to me, where you can see the money. We don't agree. 92% of us don't agree on anything in this country, and if we can agree on that and Congress still fails us, then that's when you know it's just money and profit. And I think that, and also the gun lock laws are so surprising. I grew up in a gun culture. I grew up in South Carolina. I knew kids in high school that went to go buy their gun at a flea market, which now out of that world is so devastating, because I am sure none of them had background checks and they were all minors. But I was definitely surrounded by this gun culture of, well, we're going to keep everyone safe, but then you're not going to lock your gun up for your children. And just the fact that we can't pass any gun lock laws, it's just so incredibly disappointing and counterintuitive to everything that this gun culture seemed to stand for. And so that's when you know you're just being lied to by the NRA and the gun companies, who are really trying to make a profit off of people's deaths.
Well, and Lori, that's what's so shocking, is to learn that half of guns are not locked away properly. If you have a gun at home, there are very little to no requirements. I really, to tell you the truth, wasn't aware of that.
It's really surprising. And I think if we're not willing to take care of our children, we're not willing to take care of the most vulnerable of our citizens, then we're failing, yeah, even bigger than we want to admit.
Robert, after the Sandy Hook tragedy happened, December 14th, 2012, a 20-year-old Adam Lanza fatally shot 20 children between the ages of 6 and 7. And, you know, after this happened, we were all saying, okay, if nothing happens, we have really lost our way, because these were children. And, you know, your film makes a really good point and looks at just basic background checks. Can you take us back to that time and remind us what happened when the parents of these children were flying back and forth to Washington, D.C. to lobby for background checks? In fact, the majority of NRA members even support background checks.
Well, I think anybody with a heart was deeply affected and upset by what happened at Sandy Hook. You know, I'm the father of four kids, and I can barely even still talk about it to this day without feeling intense pain and emotion. And the fact that we were not able to pass, and I say we, able to pass laws at that time, is part of what calls out to us in making this film. We spoke to many people as we were preparing the film and doing the film, and from the people who are in the film to highest level politicians to high level advisors. Over and over again, they said, look, when there's a terrible tragedy like Sandy Hook or like Aurora or like Orlando now, the people who want protection from being shot and killed are aroused. But then their intensity dies down. And why we're making the film available, and it's free, by the way, very important. We've had, with Laurie leading us, over 700 screenings. We're going to have 1,000. If you go to bravenewfilms.com, you can sign up and you can do a screening in your home, in your church, in your school, in a bowling alley, in a restaurant, because we want this film to be a tool for every single person who feels, I must do something. We've had state legislators, federal elected officials screen it and run discussion groups. We need to continue that, and we will win. You know, people never thought you could beat the cigarette companies, and we did, and the argument was, don't worry about cigarette smoke, and nobody thought you could beat the car companies, and we did. And we will win here. It won't be instant, it won't be today, but if every single person listening and watching, and the thousands and thousands and hundreds of thousands who've seen the film, take action, we will look back at some point and say, how did we let this insanity continue in our country for so long? But it's our job. It's not just the politician's job. Let's be clear. It's up to every single one of us to call, petition, join an organization, give money, whatever it is you can do. Because if we don't do something, then we are allowing it to continue.
Can you talk about what you learned about the relationship between, first off, the NRA and gun companies? In your film, we learned that the NRA brought in $310 million in revenue in 2014, and gun companies make between $210 to about $640 million a year. Talk about that relationship between the NRA and the gun companies.
Well, historically, for long periods of time, the NRA was not a lobbying arm for the gun company. I mean, it literally was set up to serve hunters and sportsmen, and they, I think it was early on, they proudly said, oh no, we don't take money from the gun companies. Well, that's completely flipped now. And what I learned, and what's very clear, you know, people say, oh, talk to the NRA, you know, they're sensible, you can talk to them. Well, if you think about, it's not a question of sensible, think about what drives them. They are basically paid for by the gun companies. The gun company's goal is to sell more guns. So if you look at the NRA as a lobbying arm to sell more guns, then things that on the surface might seem irrational or might not make sense, or why are they opposing this or that, everything they're opposing are laws and protections that would make us safer but would make people less inclined to buy guns.
And Laurie, there's incredible footage in the film, Making a Killing, Guns, Greed, and the NRA, showing gun makers writing checks to the NRA, proudly talking about their close relationship with the NRA. Can you talk about what else you learned about the gun makers' relationship with the NRA? What really stood out for you?
Well, before working on this film, I didn't know the extent of the profit. I really didn't understand that fully. And obviously, like I said before, when Congress failed to pass legislation, I knew there was a lot of money involved. But the wealth is pretty sickening. And the obliviousness that they seem to have when they're shaking hands and putting on gold jackets at fancy events, knowing that what they've done is essentially, they've been responsible for people dying, tens of thousands of people dying, and it's just absolutely heartbreaking to watch that footage and to see just the intense wealth of seeing their big houses and their boats and pictures of them laughing. It's very surreal to think that that's actually the world that we live in.
Lori Jones is program director with Brave New Films. Robert Greenwald is president of Brave New Films. Brave New Films has produced and directed 8 full-length documentaries, including Outfoxed, Rupert Murdoch's War on Journalism. Their most recent film is Making a Killing, Guns, Greed, and the NRA. And the film does an amazing job of weaving together very sobering statistics, along with profits from gun companies, the effect that the NRA has on politicians, and then interviewing so many victims and people who've been affected by gun violence. And if you'd like to join us, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. What questions or comments do you have about gun laws and what it will take to pass gun laws? Here in California, there's a very important proposition on the ballot. Prop 63 would prohibit the possession of large-capacity ammo magazines, require background checks for those who buy ammunition, and establish procedures for taking guns from felons. We have some of the strongest gun laws in the country, but still, prohibiting the possession of large-capacity ammo magazines, that is still legal. So what questions or comments do you have about this? 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or tweet at yourcallradio. All right, so we talked about the relationship between the NRA and gun companies. Robert, what about the relationship between the NRA and politicians? You've got clips of John McCain, Marco Rubio, Mike Huckabee, Rick Perry, former governor of Texas, and so many others who basically sound like NRA spokespeople.
Well, they are NRA spokespeople, and they are well paid for it, legally paid, but they receive significant contributions, some of which we know about, which are direct contributions, and some of which are, again, legally we don't know about, whether it's lobbying or consulting. But to hear the words, word for word, that comes from NRA talking points coming out of the mouths of politicians, we felt was an important point, and that's where film can be so wonderful and so important. You know, you can show it, you can feel it, you can see it. And Laurie's been heading up also our Brave New Educators, where we have, you know, anybody listening who is a teacher or a student or has relationships to any teacher or professor at a high school or a college where they would show this, and they can have a debate. And we have a study guide that goes with it. We're doing the same in places of worship or, again, as I said earlier, in your home. And it's all free because showing the politicians, showing the money, connecting the dots, and essentially saying to people, action must be taken, silence is not an answer, I think is the thing that we will be positive about in terms of all of us doing something to try to change this environment, shame the politicians, call out the heads of the gun companies who are profiting from people's deaths, and continue to expose the NRA for being a lobbying organization.
If I remember correctly, all of the politicians in your film are Republicans. What strikes you about Democrats? When they talk about these issues, they almost always start their sentence with, "We're not going to take away your guns, but," and then they talk about the legislation.
Well, yes, that's a very, very good point, and that is two parts to that. Number one, many Democrats used to be awful on the gun issue. That's changed in the last 4 years significantly, or 8 years. And so now you do not see Democrats overtly taking NRA money and protecting the NRA. Mm-hmm. But what you said is true. We still see them apologizing. And there's been so much research done in terms of effective messaging and effective framing on all issues, and the worst possible thing to do is to begin by apologizing and repeating their point. If people were to say, NRA is a lobbying arm for the gun companies, they receive millions of dollars, your safety should not be at risk so gun companies can make more money, that's a strong, clear, and a position that many people will respond to, because in the 2 years we've been working on the film, something in the culture really has shifted, and that shift is now fear. It used to be intelligent people, thoughtful people, people of concern were very clear they didn't want guns spread everywhere. But now it's gotten even further, where school or church or movie theaters, and there's fear. So one needs to be very, very thoughtful and responsible how you connect to that fear. But fear is a powerful force for change. Mm. And again, there's an opportunity for us to use that fear in a thoughtful way to motivate people to take action, because we should not be afraid to go into a movie theater or a school or a church in this country, and it's not true around the rest of the world. Mm. So either we're a totally different breed, or it's the access to guns over and over and over again.
Right. Lori, what struck you about the video of politicians? What kept going through my mind is these are the same politicians that like to call themselves, quote, pro-life politicians, and yet they're doing the bidding of the NRA. And the media, I don't think I've ever heard any reporter ask them about this glaring contradiction.
Oh, I mean, I think that's a wonderful point. Absolutely. And that goes into a bunch of different issues as well. What really strikes me is the lie. There's this frame that many of the politicians and the gun companies are using, and that's having more guns make you more safe. And, of course, that is just a blatant lie. We know that more guns equal more death. We know that if you're a woman and you have a gun in the home, that you are 3 times more likely to die. Mm. If you are in a domestic violence situation and there is a gun in the home, you are 5 times more likely to die. So this frame of, well, there's a good guy with a gun, you can protect yourself and your family, is statistically inaccurate. And I think that's what bothers me the most, is that there is, just like Robert was saying, this culture of fear, all put together because of lies, because they're not telling the people that have elected them truth about what gun ownership really means. And, of course, the other side of that is, while I think a lot of the Democratic politicians aren't actually framing what gun safety is necessarily well, there is some accuracy in the fact that there isn't legislation out there where Democrats are trying to come take your guns. These new proposed laws wouldn't actually affect a lot of people, most people. So if you are able to pass a background check, you can still have a gun. Maybe you can't have large capacity magazines, but you can still have a gun. So there is this fear that is being projected on both sides of this issue, and I think we just have to do a better job at framing, and I think that comes from just using actual statistics. Mm-hmm.
Robert, I know we have to let you go in a minute. What is the most effective thing people can do to get involved in this issue?
Well, the most effective thing is to get involved. There is no one thing to do, and, you know, people, what are the things the NRA, and always people say, well, if this law were in place, then that person still could have done X, or if this legislation had been passed, that person could have done Y. The point is, again, thinking about this as a public health crisis, using the model of the cars, the cigarettes, and the LGBT movement, there are many, many different ways to come at this. So you should go where you feel comfortable and where you can make a contribution. Is it a local organization? Is it legislative? Is it media work? Is it giving money? Is it going door to door? You know, there are so many wonderful organizations doing really important work, and there are some good politicians who need to be supported. Or there may be, you know, there are social movements. Whatever you can connect to, making phone calls. There are so many opportunities, but it's not acceptable to just say, oh, this is terrible, I feel bad, the world is coming to an end. That's nonsense. And the film is there as a tool for every single person who wants to do something, do a screening. It's a way to begin, not end, the problem.
Well, Robert, thank you again for joining us, and thank you for making this film and giving a voice to all of the people in the film. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us and talking about this.
Robert Greenwald is president of Brave New Films. He's produced and directed a number of documentaries. His most recent is Making a Killing, Guns, Greed, and the NRA. It tells the story of how guns and the billions made by gun companies affect the lives of everyday Americans. 7 children are killed by guns every day. 7. A child has been shot and killed every other day since the Sandy Hook tragedy in 2012. Every year, more than 20,000 people kill themselves with a gun. Every 16 hours, a woman is shot and killed by a husband or boyfriend. These are the sobering statistics we learn about in this film. We also learn about the profits made by the gun companies. Beretta brought in $638 million in 2012. Smith & Wesson, $626 million. They then give money to the NRA, they give money to politicians, and after Sandy Hook, we don't get universal background checks. That's how it works, and that's how what this documentary exposes. We're joined today by Lori Jones, Brave New Films Program Director, and now I would like to welcome Kate Ranta to the show. Kate is an activist and survivor of gun violence. In 2012, Kate and her father were shot twice by her estranged husband, Thomas Maffei, in front of their 4-year-old son. And Kate's story is one of several featured in this documentary, Making a Killing. Hi, Kate. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you.
Well, Kate, I saw your story in this film, and what has it been like for you to share your story and really become an activist on these issues overnight?
Well, first of all, I would say that just around the issue of domestic violence, there tends to be a lot of shame. Women undergo a lot of victim blaming when they're coming out of domestic violence situations, like, why didn't you just leave? And what did you do to make him snap? And, you know, those sorts of questions that are just ridiculous. And so I was kind of reeling coming out of, you know, my own situation, and then it escalated when he actually shot me. And it's just something that I never, ever, ever imagined would happen to me. And while I was in the hospital, a group of friends of mine had created a public Facebook page just to, like, give updates about, you know, what was going on with us in the hospital. And basically right after I got home from the hospital, I took the page over, and it was like without even a thought, I just made it my voice. And I found it very, very empowering to chronicle the journey. You know, I for a long time I was posting almost daily. My thoughts, my feelings, pictures, just to raise awareness so people can understand what victims go through. Mm.
And like so many women, you started off with a very happy marriage, and then something started to change. Your family members saw the change, you saw the change, and we learn about all of this in the documentary. Your husband used a Beretta handgun. The company and its subsidiaries gave the NRA $2.2 million in 2013. Yeah. The company's CEO gave the NRA $250,000 in 2013. How did your husband get his hands on a gun? Why did he own a gun in the first place?
Well, my ex-husband was a major in the Air Force, and his father was also military, and so he actually grew up around guns as a child. And then, you know, he went hunting with his dad, and it was just something that they did. And then he joined the military, and by the time I met him, he was 20-something years in, and guns were just part of the culture. When I met him, he had a cabinet full of rifles, hunting rifles. He had a couple of shotguns. He had several handguns. And I had just never really been around that culture. I didn't grow up with guns. I didn't know people whose parents really had guns. So it was kind of a whole new world to me.
And the other thing that I learned about in the film that doesn't really get much attention is even if you're in a violent relationship and if you feel like your life is threatened and you know that your partner has a gun or guns, you have to have a restraining order in order for the authorities to take the guns away from your partner.
Correct. So we had what I call the first physical altercation in January of 2011. And I called the police, and they advised me to go get a restraining order, which it would be a temporary restraining order, which I did. And the next day he was served, and in Florida, the law enforcement was able to seize all the weapons that were in the home, which was all the ones that I had mentioned. There was just a ton. But what we were told that night was that they could take those weapons, but that, because we wouldn't have a hearing for another 2 weeks in front of a judge, so he could go out the next day and just legally buy a gun.
Wow.
So I don't know exactly how he got the gun that he used to shoot us with, but he the whole time was able to legally buy one. So
we'll talk.
There was no protection.
I want to ask you about how you're coping with the trauma after the shooting, but talk a little bit about what happened before then. Trying to get the restraining order, trying to find a safe place to go so he can't find you, and then knowing that he's legally allowed to buy a gun even after the restraining order. I mean, what was that like for you emotionally?
Well, that was probably almost the most traumatizing part of the situation. I do have PTSD as a result of the shooting, but I also have PTSD as a result of this trauma of trying to get away from this person who I did fear that I wasn't sure how far he would take it. And it was a couple of years between leaving him and when he actually showed up to shoot us. And so I'm trying to move on with my life. I'm trying to keep everything together for my son, who was very, very young at the time. I was working. Due to the divorce and his ongoing stonewalling of the divorce, I was under intense financial pressure. I filed bankruptcy. My car was repossessed. I mean, these were all things leading up to the shooting. So the shooting was the climax, but there was a whole lot going on leading up to that.
Wow.
And it was enormously traumatizing.
We're speaking today with Kate Ranta. She's a survivor of gun violence and now an activist who works on these issues. In 2012, Kate and her father were shot twice by her estranged husband, Thomas Maffei, in front of their 4-year-old son. Luckily, obviously, Kate survived. Her father survived. And gosh, Kate, in the film Making a Killing, I mean, it's so tragic to see the video of a police officer talking to your 4-year-old little boy about what happened. So he's, what, 8 years old now?
Yeah, actually, his birthday's tomorrow. He'll turn 8 tomorrow.
Oh, well, happy birthday to your boy. So how is he doing now? And how do you talk to him about these issues?
Well, the state of Florida sent in a trauma team to deal with children who've, you know, witnessed a traumatic event, and they came in basically the day after the shooting and worked with him pretty intensely for a good year or so. And you know, he remembers everything. We heard a lot of, oh, well, he was only 4, so it'll probably fade. But even 4 years later, he remembers every single thing that happened. He remembers what he said. He remembers what happened in the room. His comes out, he's very kind of hypervigilant and protective of me, which a little child shouldn't. That's not a position that a little child should have to be in. Mm. You know, I'm the mom, I'm the protector. But he saw me in a very vulnerable state, and as such, he's very protective of me now. But I mean, he's kind and has a heart of gold, and
he's doing, you know, he's funny, doing great in school. So he was surrounded by love immediately after the shooting, and, you know, we haven't stopped.
Mm. The statistics that we learn about women in the film are so sobering. Every 16 hours, a woman is shot and killed by her husband or boyfriend. Women are 500% more likely to be shot if their partner has a gun. And then with background checks, 46% fewer women are shot in states with background checks. First off, mm-hmm. Kate, every 16 hours, a woman is shot and killed by a husband or boyfriend?
Yeah. In my experience and in the experiences that I've heard from fellow, we call each other survivor sisters, and I, is that it's these men who are abusive, they're losing power and control over their wife and over the family. And none of this is about he snapped or she pushed him to do it or any of that nonsense. It really is about power and control, and he's losing it, and he's going to make the ultimate decision about whether she lives or dies, and the statistics back it up.
Mm. Today we're talking with Kate Ranta. She tells her story in the documentary Making a Killing, Guns, Greed, and the NRA. We're also joined by Brave New Films program director Lori Jones. Lori, what else struck you about some of the women survivors that you met?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I will say meeting Kate in person was incredibly inspiring. I got to watch Kate talk to a group of young women and men at Barry University when we did a screening of her section, and it was, I was really nervous at the beginning of the screening because it was during a lunch, and so there was a lot of students really preoccupied on what they were eating and what they were going to grab off the table. And then the moment Kate's section came up on the screen, there was a hush across the room. And then after the section, the students were just asking Kate all of these brave questions that I think were hard to ask and maybe even harder to answer. But Kate is such a survivor in more ways than one. And so the fact that she has put all of her energy into advocacy, representing women and fighting for laws that will protect women, is it's so touching. And I can't even begin to say how much everyone at Brave New Films is rooting for her all of the time, and that's true for everyone in our film, and they've definitely, their lives have touched us in so many ways.
Kate, what has your experience been like in trying to pressure politicians to pass common sense gun legislation like background checks? Before you came on, we were talking with Robert Greenwald about the fact that after Sandy Hook passed, Sandy Hook tragedy happened, an overwhelming majority of the population was pressuring politicians to pass background checks, and we didn't get it. So what's your experience been like?
Well, I haven't actually gotten involved in a whole lot of policy at this point. I recently relocated to the D.C. area. I left Florida, which was a very, very good move for me. I used to live up in D.C. for years before I moved to Florida. So basically, the week I got here, Senator Chris Murphy had his filibuster, and then the House members the Democrats did their sit-in, and all of this happened within the first week. And the next thing you know, I was speaking on the Capitol steps and speaking at rallies and standing next to John Lewis and Nancy Pelosi. And so I'm coming into that now, I think, because of where I'm located, which is great. I am all in. I will talk to any politician that will listen to me.
Hmm. That is Kate Ranta. She tells her story in the new documentary Making a Killing, Guns, Greed, and the NRA. She's a survivor of gun violence. In 2012, Kate and her dad were shot twice by her estranged husband, Thomas Maffei, in front of their 4-year-old son. We're also joined by Brave New Films program director Lori Jones. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. If you have personal stories with this issue, we'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts on legislation? Sometimes I'm afraid that we're becoming so numb to these stories. I follow this amazing group on Facebook, Moms Demand Action. Every day they are posting stories about gun violence. In fact, just 15 minutes ago. Here's a headline. Father kills two teens, two children in attack on family at Michigan home. So what are your thoughts on this? What will it take to create real change on this issue? We have an email from Robert who says, in the U.S., there are over 300 million firearms in private hands. Cutting off all production of guns immediately would not reduce this number. A gun is durable for decades. Why is there no discussion of regulating ammunition? A gun is useless without it. Well, in California, there is Prop 63, which would prohibit the possession of large capacity ammo magazines and require background checks for those who buy ammunition. Again, that's Prop 63. We're voting on that in November. And can you tell us anything else about ammunition and what's being done on that front, Lori?
Well, I can say that in the mass shooting section of our film, we witnessed someone buying large amounts of ammunition just over the internet before he went and killed a group of people in a movie theater. And he was able to buy ammo online for a very long period of time, and there were no flags on that. I think that that conversation is definitely entering different state legislatures. The Prop 63 is a wonderful place to start, and I think it seems obvious. It seems so obvious that this is where we should be going. If you are really only defending your home, or if you are really only going hunting, then there's only so much ammo that you need, and you probably shouldn't be afraid of it being tracked. So I think that even though maybe we are inundated with stories, I certainly feel inundated with all of the different headlines of different shootings, I do feel like we're at a tipping point where people are starting to say, enough is enough, so what can we do? And so I think something like Prop 63 in November, we'll see where it goes, but I think that this is a part of the tipping point.
Well, thank you for that email, Robert. We have another call about Prop 63. Let's hear from Eric in San Francisco. Hi, Eric.
Yeah, I have a strong interest in gun control because when I was a kid, my father tried to shoot my mother with a shotgun, and luckily it was dark at night and he missed. So personally, I'd like to see all guns and ammunition banned from private ownership in any way. But I'm also with the San Francisco Green Party, and we looked at Prop 63 and we found a major problem in it, and we're recommending a no vote on it. And that's because as it's written, and remember that when you have a ballot measure and it passes...
Eric, sorry, your line's really bad, so can you try to make it short?
Yeah, so Prop 63 explicitly exempts both current and retired law enforcement officers from the law. And as we know, a lot of times law enforcement officers, quote-unquote, honorably retire instead of being fired because they were violently misusing their power and even guns.
Well, Eric, sorry we have to cut you off, but there's some sort of noise on your phone. Eric wanted to call and let us know that with Prop 63, retired law enforcement are exempt. We're going to have a conversation about Prop 63 in the coming weeks, so be sure to tune in for that. And thank you for calling, Eric. Sorry about that, but your line was bad. Let's go next to Richard in San Francisco. Hi, Richard.
Yes, hello, Rose. I just returned from an extensive trip to see family and friends in England, and everybody asked me about this subject. One guy said to me, he said, I just can't wrap my head around it. Why is nothing done? And when I point out to them that since 9/11, where we went to war because of 2,300 Americans being killed, more Americans have been killed than during the Second World War, which is around 460,000, they just go white and start talking. It's absolutely remarkable, and a lot of them have sworn never to come here. they will not come and visit me, because so the point is, this is not just costing in medical bills and trauma, it's costing in the tourist industry as well a great deal of money. And an important thing happened the day I left. I was watching parliamentary debate, actually Prime Minister's question time, and before the debate, the Prime Minister and the Leader of the Opposition paid tribute to a policeman who had been stabbed the day before trying to arrest a rapist. The other two policemen with him arrested the rapist, and the policeman is expected to survive. He's actually doing okay. Now, you know, in America, all three of those policemen would be dead.
Right,
for sure.
Right.
And the other thing that happened was, the same day in London, a woman opened her door. She was with her nephew, and they were both shot to death. And a man ran off. Now, it turns out it was a case of mistaken identity. He was a gang member who had managed to get hold of a gun. Both those people are dead. And so this just reinforces everything you're saying. And I'm working as best I can to try and make this problem go away.
Richard, thank you for calling. Sorry to cut you off. We only have a minute left. And this is what the families of people who shot themselves, committed suicide in this film, Making a Killing, say, is if we had three more days, a background check, if the gun was locked, my son most likely would not be dead right now. We only have about a minute left, Kate. Final thoughts, what are you, now that you're moving to Florida, you're planning to get more involved, how are you planning to get more involved, and what do you think is most effective?
I think the power in this movement is in the survivor stories. You had mentioned that, you know, we're hearing, you know, we're inundated with all these headlines, but I mean, I'm involved with Everytown for Gun Safety Survivor Network, and there's hundreds of survivors that have horrendous stories, and I think that that's where the real change comes, because we can talk about, I mean, the money is, the greed and the money is a big thing, and policy is a big thing, but, I mean, we are the real life behind the story, and how lives are just drastically, horribly changed because of gun violence. So I'll just never stop speaking out.
Mm. Well, Kate, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for sharing your story in this film, Making a Killing.
You're welcome.
Thank you. That is Kate Ranta, an activist and a survivor of gun violence. In 2012, she and her dad were shot by her estranged husband, Thomas Maffei, in front of their 4-year-old son. She tells her story in Making a Killing, Guns, Greed, and the NRA. And we've been joined by Brave New Films program director, Lori Jones. And Lori, thank you for all the work that you do. We'd love to have you back sometime to talk about the traveling that you're doing around the country, talking to people about this issue.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
All right.
I did just want to say that if anyone wants to sign up to screen the film for free or get involved or learn more information, just go to makingakilling.com.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show, Malihe Razazan is senior producer, Matt Martin is executive producer, and Helena Murphy is our intern and researcher. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.